So as we've seen from our study of the book of Hebrews, our writer is addressing a group of Christians who were considering giving up on their Christian walk because they were being persecuted and because they were suffering. And he says this in Hebrews chapter 10, beginning in verse 32. Remember those earlier days after you had received the light, when you endured in a great conflict full of suffering. Sometimes you were publicly exposed to insult and persecution. At other times you stood side by side with those who were so treated. You suffered along with those in prison and joyfully accepted the confiscation of your property, because you knew that you yourselves had better and lasting possessions. So do not throw away your confidence. It will be richly rewarded. You need to persevere so that when you have done the will of God, you will receive what he has promised. Our writer then goes on to give us chapter 11 and shows us that faith leads to perseverance or endurance. And the climax of all of that is in Hebrews 12 and beginning in verse 2. Where the writer says, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of faith. For the joy set before him, he endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him who endured such opposition from sinners, so that you will not grow weary, so that you will not lose heart. Now the Greek word for endure here is hypomeno. Meno means to stand or to stay. And hyper, it's that little prefix from which we get the English prefix hyper. What the word endurance actually transliterates into is to hyperstay or to hyperstand. And it means that you have put your foot down and nothing is going to knock you off of your feet. Now the question for us is this. Is it possible for us to be a durable person? Is it possible for us to endure? Is it possible in a throwaway culture, in a society of throwaway relationships, a society of throwaway identities, is it possible to stick with something and to hyperstand? When we're facing trials and facing persecution and the temptation is to throw it in and to give up, is it possible for us to hyperstay? Well, the answer from the writer of Hebrews is yes, it is. In fact, one of the main reasons he's written this epistle is to show us how it is possible to hyperstand, how it is possible to be someone who, once you stand somewhere, you're never going to be knocked off of your feet. Today we're going to have a look at the principles in Moses' life that show us the secret of this endurance, the secret of staying the course, the secret of someone who stands firm, who stays put, and who can't be knocked off of their feet for anything. We're going to have a look at what Moses endured, and then we're going to see how he did it. Hebrews 11, and verse 23. By faith, Moses' parents hid him for 3 months after he was born, because they saw that he was no ordinary child, and they were not afraid of the king's edict. As he begins to talk about Moses here, our writer first introduces us to the faith of his parents, who incidentally are not named in Hebrews and are not named in the original account in Exodus chapter 2. But we know the story, don't we? The Israelites had gone from the privileged position that they enjoyed in Egypt under Joseph to becoming into a despised position. They were hard labor slaves. Because of his fear of the Israelites, multiplying too rapidly, Pharaoh had issued a command to throw all of their newborn baby boys into the Nile River. But somehow God had enabled Moses' parents to see something in this baby to make them hope that he just might be the promised deliverer of his people. Because they thought that God had destined him for such a great role, they by faith defied the king's edict and hid him for 3 months. Now can you imagine what that would have entailed? If Pharaoh's guards had caught them, they would have executed the entire family for insubordination for the king. So their by faith choice to hide their son exposed the entire family to the risk of death. And just think how carefully they would have had to live. They couldn't risk their other children playing with the children in the local neighborhood for fear that they would let something slip out about their baby brother. If Pharaoh's police had roamed the neighborhood looking for newborn baby boys, their family would have sat in silent terror. You see, the choice to obey God by faith always involves a certain amount of upfront risk. Remember, this couple didn't know how the story would end when they made their decision. They could have all been slaughtered for what they'd done. But they chose to obey God and risk the consequences. They feared the unseen God who is the author of life more than they feared the edict of the king. The choice of Moses' parents was to obey God by faith. And let me say that God often works through the faith of unknown parents or grandparents to raise up unusually gifted leaders to accomplish great things for God. Except for their well-known son, this couple would have lived in obscurity, just as lowly slaves. But God used their courageous faith in a mighty way. And as parents, we should live by faith and ask God to make our children beautiful for him. At first, Moses' parents would have had to protect them from this evil world. We teach them God's ways and we pray for their coming to faith. And eventually we'll have to launch them out, trusting that God will take care of them. And even after Pharaoh's daughter rescued Moses from the river, I expect that his parents would have prayed for him for many years. Lord, keep him from the many spiritual dangers that there are in Pharaoh's court. Teach him to follow you. So keep praying for your children, even after they've left home. Obey God by faith and entrust your children to his care. He may use them mightily for his kingdom. Let's continue with the writer's account here of Moses in verse 24. By faith, Moses, when he had grown up, refused to be known as the son of Pharaoh's daughter. He chose to be mistreated along with the people of God rather than enjoy the fleeting pleasures of sin. He regarded disgrace for the sake of Christ as greater value than the treasures of Egypt, because he was looking ahead to his reward. By faith, he left Egypt, not fearing the king's anger. He persevered because he saw him who is invisible. So first of all then, let's see what Moses endured. There are four major crisis points in his life, and they're all mentioned in these few verses. The first major crisis point was where it says he refused to be called the son of the daughter of Pharaoh, but decided to identify with the people of God and be mistreated with them. As we know, Moses was an Israelite who was adopted by Pharaoh's daughter. He was brought into the court and had the most incredible training. He had access to all of the corridors of power. He had an incredible career ahead of him. Joseph, years ago, had been both an Israelite and a prince in Egypt, but times had now changed. Pharaoh was nervous of these Israelites, afraid that they would become strong. So he turned them into slaves. He had begun to oppress them, beating them, exploiting their labor. Moses realized that he could either be a prince in Egypt or he could be a leader of the Israelites, but he couldn't do both in the way that Joseph had done. He knew a choice would come, and one day that choice sort of ambushed him. He was out and about when he saw an Egyptian taskmaster beating a helpless Hebrew slave. And in anger, Moses killed the Egyptian taskmaster and buried his body in the sand. At that point, he had thrown his lot in with the slaves. He decided no longer to take the advantages that he had as being a member of the royal court. And as hard as that would have been to do, we're told there was a second crisis point that happened almost immediately after, and it was an even harder choice. Verse 27. By faith, he left Egypt, not fearing the king's anger. Now, what does that mean? Well, here's what happens. The very next day, Moses suddenly realized that he had to make that choice all over again. Only this time, a much harder choice. Because the very next day, he discovered two Israelites fighting with each other. And he walks up to them and he says, "Why are you fighting? Stop it now." And one of the Hebrews turns to Moses and says, "Who made you judge and ruler over us? Are you going to kill me in the same way that you killed the Egyptian yesterday?" And suddenly it hit Moses. What I did wasn't a secret. In fact, he had killed the Egyptian and news that it was already out. And he realized that Pharaoh would hear about it pretty soon. But the worst thing in all of this was that his own people had rejected him. They resented the idea of him being the self-appointed leader over them, and they were frightened of him. Suddenly, Moses in one day had gone from having two peoples to having no people at all. Now here is why the choice was so amazing. We know enough about the autocratic governments in ancient times that if a son of the daughter of Pharaoh killed a commoner in a tantrum and then turns to the grandfather, turns to Pharaoh and says, "I'm sorry, I didn't know what got into me," the Pharaoh would have said, "That's no problem. Come on in. Okay, you killed a commoner. You killed a slave. Oh well. Never mind." Moses knew he could go back. But now he realized if he stayed true to his identification with his people, he'd be an outcast. He knew he would always be an outcast. And he'd be an eternal fugitive from the wrath of Pharaoh, who was the most powerful man on the face of the earth. He knew he could actually go away from his principles. He could do the wrong thing and be safe, or he could do the right thing and face absolute career suicide. To be faithful to his principles meant he was not going to be this great leader. He was going to become a fugitive. He was going to run off into the desert, where if he was not killed by beasts or thieves, which it was most likely, he was going to be a fugitive. But he decided to do the right thing. He decided to obey, even though it could have meant the end of his life. As he stood out there, as far as he was concerned, his life was over. That's what it looked like to all intents and purposes. And any person looking at what happened to Moses would say, "Look, you're crazy. Here's a man with tremendous leadership skills and his people need him. But look what's happened. Stuck out as a shepherd in the desert for years and years. Now a member of just a marginal group of people. His life at an end. Everything in tatters." And there he was. He passed his 40s. He passed his 50s. he passed his 60s, he passed his 70s, and he got to 80 years of age. And there he was, a complete has-been. Everything over. But then one day, God showed up in the burning bush and presented Moses with a third crisis point. When God said to him, Moses, I've got a job for you. You know, even though you are just a member of this marginal little group of people, even though you're a nobody, I want you to do two things for me. First of all, I want you to walk up to Pharaoh, the most powerful person on the face of this earth, and I want you to say, I'm about to take your entire free labor force from you. Then I want you to lead out that group of people broken by years of slavery with no economic or personal resources, and I want you to lead them out. And even though they're going to continually fight with you and argue with you, and even though you know the greatest army on the face of the earth is going to come after you, I want you to lead them away. And Moses did it. And then the final crisis point that's mentioned here is when he stood on the banks of the Red Sea. On one side, a mountain. On the other side, the army of Pharaoh. And on the other side, the sea. And this is what happened. Exodus chapter 14, beginning in verse 13. Exodus 14 and verse 13. Moses answered the people, do not be afraid, stand firm, and you will see the deliverance of the Lord that he will bring to you today. The Egyptians you see today, you will never see again. The Lord will fight for you. You need only to be still. Verse 21. Then Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and all that night the Lord drove the sea back with a strong east wind and turned it into dry land. The waters were divided, and the Israelites went through the sea on dry ground with a wall of water on their right and on their left. Now do you notice what Moses said to the people? He said, stand firm. And you will see the deliverance that the Lord will bring you today. Moses was exhorting the people to higher stand and to see God's deliverance. And in obedience to God's word, he took his people. He faced the ocean. And he said, forward. And he literally went into the sea and he endured. He higher stood. He put his feet into the Red Sea and passed through. Nobody knocked him off of his feet. Now how did he become a man like that? You notice that every occasion the crisis and the test grew worse, and yet at every point he was able to handle it. He never would have been able to do what he did at the Red Sea 40 years earlier. But at every point he continued to grow in perseverance and he endured. Now how did he do that? Well, here's our second main point. How Moses endured. See, one thing we must not think is that Christianity is the same as Stoicism. We mustn't think that Christian endurance, the endurance that is offered to us here, is some kind of grit your teeth mentality, some kind of negative thing. That's not what the writer of Hebrews is referring to at all. We're told here exactly what Moses did to become this kind of person. And if we do the same, that it will be exactly the same for us. We will be able to hyperstand through all of the crisis points in our life. Now there are three verbs in the passage in Hebrews that tell us how he did it. First of all, Moses regarded. Hebrews 11 and verse 26. I read this in the New International Version. Hebrews 11, verse 26. He regarded disgrace for the sake of Christ as of greater value than the treasures of Egypt, because he was looking ahead to his reward. In fact, this word regarded here is not a very good translation. The English Standard Version uses the word considered. The Message uses the translation valued. Moses looked at the treasures of Egypt, and he looked to the reward that he would have with God, and he considered the two. And he assessed that the disgrace that he would have by being faithful to God was far more valuable than all of the treasures of Egypt. And let me just tell you how this works. You see, this isn't stoicism. This is not just holding on. He actually considered, assessed, and valued. You see, this is a calculation word. It's the same word that Paul uses in Philippians 3 and verse 7. Again, I read it in the NIV. Here Paul writes, "But whatever were gains to me, I now consider loss for the sake of Christ." It's the same word. But in the New King James Version, it reads like this: "But what things were gained to me, these I have counted loss for Christ." You see, it's a calculation word. So here's the image. Most of us are lay people when it comes to things like diamonds and houses. In fact, we're lay people when it comes to various things. So what we do is we get an expert in who knows how to assess. And the expert comes in and he says, "Well, you know what? This diamond is worth 10 times more than this diamond." Or he says, "This house in this particular location is worth so much more than this house over in this neighbourhood." You see, the expert analyses it for you, and we as lay people say, "Wow, I didn't know that." Instead of going on appearances, you get the expert in who assesses and says, "This is far more valuable, it's worth far more than this, what you've got here." You see, Moses knew how to do that. And here's how he did it. It even shows us. He says he decided the treasures he would have with God are far greater, are of more value than the passing pleasures of sin. The pleasures of sin last but for a short time. Let me give you the first secret about enduring in faith. And here it is. Moses knew that you are only as durable as the thing you love most. You are only as durable as the thing that you love most. Moses thought, if I love something most that can never pass away, then I will never pass away. If I can love something most of all that will last forever, I will last forever. But if I love something that is vulnerable, then I'm vulnerable. I'm as durable as that which I love most. Thomas Oden teaches philosophical theology at Drew University in the United States. And he says, this is how the human heart works. First, every person is goal-orientated. You can't live if you don't have something to look forward to. Second, he says, all goals compete, so that you can't live unless you choose one goal as the very center of value by which all of your other goals are judged. One bottom line by which all of your other goals are evaluated. And third, he says, if you choose a finite center of value, you're always going to be anxious. You're always going to be anxious. This is what he's written. Anxiety becomes neurotically intensified to the degree that I've idolized finite values. Suppose my center of value is my health. or my political party, or my sexual attractiveness, or my financial productivity. If my center of value is any of these things, when these things are under threat, and they always are, if I think about it, I am shaken to my depths. Therefore, I try not to think in order to keep my peace. Do you see what he's saying? He's saying if you choose anything but God, anything but an infinite source of value, if you have anything other than God as the center of value, you're going to be shakeable. And Moses had figured that out. He says, I will be as durable as the thing I love most. And if I decide the most important thing is that I have somebody to love me, I will do whatever it takes to get that somebody to love me. I'd like to obey God, but if I have to disobey God to get somebody to love me, then that's the center of my value. You see? You're as durable as the person that you've banked everything on. But you see, the trouble is, another person is not durable. Another person is a sinner. Another person is frail and fragile. And the same is true if you bank everything on a political party or your sexual attractiveness or on your productivity. You see, Moses had figured it out. He had regarded the situation. He had considered, he had assessed, and he had thought about it. This endurance, this strength that Christianity gives you is not something that comes automatically. You have to think about it. You have to make an assessment. You have to reason. You have to use your mind. And as you're considering, you have to value what really is important. Yes, these trials and difficulties are happening, but they're nothing in comparison to the wonderful future that God has in store for all of us. And that's what we should live for. See, you're as durable as the thing you love most. The second verb in this passage is that Moses suffered. Moses suffered. Hebrews 11 and verse 25. Again, I read this in the NIV. It says, he chose to be mistreated along with the people of God rather than to enjoy the fleeting pleasures of sin. In the New King James it says, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the passing pleasures of sin. Now Moses didn't look for suffering, but he decided to obey even though the obedience entailed suffering. What it looks like to obey God and do the right thing is going to bring suffering. The big temptation for all of us is to red ink God's script for us. To say, no, I don't like the way that he's got this mapped out. I'll change it. I'll write something else in that I want God to do for me. In other words, here is Moses and he could have said, you know what? I went out on a limb for these people. I risked everything for them, and what an ungrateful bunch of whatevers. Why should I be faithful to God now? Because to be faithful to God means utter oblivion. This is a complete waste of all my talents. Now just think about it from a human point of view. Here is the one Hebrew in the world who had all the connections, had all of the knowledge, all of the training, all of the ability, all of the intellect. The Israelites need him, but they reject him, and now it's a complete waste. And yet he decided to obey God anyway. And was his life ruined? What Moses didn't realize until later was that he wasn't ready to be the leader of the Israelites when he killed that Egyptian. He needed two levels to be prepared as a leader. The first level was to have this great training that he received in Pharaoh's court. But the second level was that he had to go and live with a simple people to be humbled. If he was ever going to lead them, he had to understand them. Killing the Egyptian showed a degree of arrogance. He may have been a prince in Egypt, but he wasn't yet a prince in Israel. They were afraid of him, and rightly so. He needed to be humbled. He needed to learn self-control. He thought that he was ready to lead, but he wasn't. If he had decided to lead, if the Israelites had allowed him to lead, it would have been a disaster at that point. And yet it seemed a disaster when he had to flee to the backside of the desert. Now here's the second secret about enduring in faith. When it looks like obedience to God leads to disaster, obey anyway. Because obedience isn't actually leading us to disaster, it's taking us away from it. Do you know how you become an enduring person? Do you know how you get strength? Over the years, if you obey in spite of suffering, if you obey in suffering, if you obey even if it brings suffering, you'll see the more enduring you become, the more durable you become. But it takes years, you see, it takes years to develop that. But eventually you'll see it. Moses regarded, he suffered. And then the third verb in this passage is that Moses saw. Moses saw. Hebrews 11 and verse 26. He regarded disgrace for the sake of Christ as of greater value than the treasures of Egypt, because he was looking ahead to his reward. By faith he left Egypt, not fearing the king's anger. He persevered because he saw him who is invisible. Now how did he do that? Well, take a look at Psalm 16. Psalm 16. Here David says in verse 8, I keep my eyes always on the Lord. With him at my right hand, I will not be shaken. I will be able to hyperstand. No one will knock me off of my feet. With the Lord at my right hand, and my eyes always on him. What Moses was doing, you see, was keeping his eyes on God. He was reminding himself of who God was. And he was seeing the unseen. He was continually seeing God. And that means he disciplined himself to remember who God is. Now, how does that work in practice? Well, it would have looked something like this. Moses gets to the Red Sea, and again, it looks like a disaster. It looks like the Red Sea is never going to open up. But Moses reasons, you see, he calculates. What makes me think that I'm wiser than God? God is wise. He knows better than I do. He reminded himself of who this God was, who had performed all of these miracles in Egypt. And because he was continually being overwhelmed with the wisdom of God, he persevered in what God wanted him to do. The reason Moses was able to do what he did and become the great man that he was, the reason he was able to assess, the reason he was able to choose and eventually get to the place where he was able to look at the Red Sea and say to the Israelites, charge forward, let's go in, was because he saw the wisdom of God. And if we want to get to that situation, if we want to get to that kind of character, we have to assess and we have to choose, but we also have to see the wisdom of God. You see, Moses did that. Now here's the third secret regarding enduring faith. We see more wisdom than Moses did. Each one of us sees more wisdom than Moses did. Do you know why? We see someone that Moses represented. We know of somebody who left a much greater palace than Pharaoh's palace. We know somebody who came to his own and his own received him not. We know somebody who was rejected by his people, but rejected in a far deeper, a far more profound and a far more radical way than Moses was rejected, because they killed him. We see God's wisdom at work because the very rejection of Moses led to the salvation of those people. And we see in the very rejection of the one who is greater than Moses lead to the greatest triumph in all history. Therefore, because we see the one who did that and was faithful in spite of our rejection of him, we see the wisdom of God in a way that Moses didn't. Although it's foolishness to the world, we see the incredible wisdom of God on the cross. We see somebody who was willing to be rejected. Someone who was willing to be obedient to God. It meant death for him, but from that death came redemption for all of mankind. Let's continue in Psalm 16 and verse 9. Therefore my heart is glad and my tongue rejoices. My body also will rest secure. Because you will not abandon me to the realm of the dead, nor will you let your faithful one see decay. You make known to me the path of life. You will fill me with joy in your presence, with eternal pleasures at your right hand. This is the reward that Moses was looking forward to, so much more valuable than the treasures of Egypt. And he was able to endure because he saw the wisdom of God beyond his situation and beyond his circumstances. But we can see something Moses didn't. Jesus Christ was rejected, but was faithful to us. And though it looked like a disaster on the cross, it meant redemption. That is the wisdom of God. 1 Corinthians chapter 1 and verse 13. 1 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 13. Where Paul writes, "You are in Christ Jesus, who has become for us wisdom from God. That is our righteousness, holiness, and redemption. Therefore, as it is written, let the one who boasts, boast in the Lord." Can we consider and assess the value of Jesus Christ? Can we choose to suffer with him for a short while, knowing that the long-term disaster will be avoided? Can we see in Jesus Christ the wisdom of God that turned the apparent failure of the cross into the very means of our salvation? If we can, the boasting is in the Lord, because he is the one that has made it possible for us to be able to spend the whole of eternity in his presence with joy forevermore. That's what Moses was able to look forward to and see. And if we can do these things by faith, we will endure. We will persevere. May God help us to look to the author and to the finisher of our salvation.